Jim, thanks so much for doing this. Always great to have you on here on 102.5 The Game.
Oh, glad to be here. It's a fun time of year, Max. Seems like there's a million things going on.
Yeah, they've lined everything up in your business to basically happen at the same time. We had the draft combine in San Diego a few weeks ago, which is a relatively new and growing event. Now the draft is part of the All-Star game. The Futures game is a day earlier. How much fun has all of this become for you as things have moved into what seems like pretty permanent time slots?
I would not use the word fun, Max. I selfishly, my life is a little bit easier. I like my draft in June, my Futures game in July. I got very used to that calendar. It's a lot crammed into the weekend. I mean, just in a span of 3 days this weekend, I will be covering but not broadcasting the High School All-America game in L.A. That's on Friday. On Saturday, I will be broadcasting the High School Home Run Derby.
Nice.
And the Futures game in L.A. And then, oh, by the way, working on a mock draft after the Futures game is over into the wee hours of the morning. Then on Sunday, I will be doing an update to my mock draft before broadcasting the draft. And then Monday and Tuesday, we will be broadcasting some more drafts. So, hey, I mean, it's fun. It's a lot of my favorite events crammed into one time period. I would be less than honest, though, if, like I said, I didn't tell you I wish they were more spread out.
Hey, well, I think it does draw more attention to all of them. And by the way, the Futures game will be on Peacock this year. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So who all will you be with for that?
God, you're asking me tough questions. I believe, because I'm doing so many things. I'm 99.9% sure that one I'm doing with Scott Braun and Yonder Alonso.
Nice. Okay, so it's a real MLB Network type crew.
Yeah,
so that
MLB
should be a lot
Network
of fun.
MLB still producing the game, so it will look like I think it always has on MLB Network. It'll just be on Peacock, and then it will air the next morning on MLB Network before the draft.
Great.
Not right before the draft, but it will be on MLB Network the next on. I got my days already. It's Sunday morning. It'll be on MLB Network.
Well, it's already tough because they moved it by a day, and now the draft's on Sunday and all that jazz. So we're talking.
And it's like I'm always, when I'm writing these stories, it's what time it is Eastern time, even though we're going to be on Pacific time, and I live Central
You live in
time.
Central time, yeah.
So it's like, I'm not even sure. I just know I'm getting up early and
we'll
be at Dodger Stadium for most of Saturday, and then I will be at the LA Live set on Sunday. And I think we're at the JW Marriott LA Live on Monday and Tuesday. I will be going day to day and just trying to focus on the immediate task ahead.
Our guest is Jim Callis from MLB.com and MLB Pipeline, talking about the Futures game and the MLB draft coming up this weekend as part of the MLB All-Star festivities in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium. And for those who are listening over the air on Tuesday night, you just heard our interview with Jack Leiter, one of the best all time at Vandy. Drafted in the top five to the Rangers last year, now in AA. Been a little bit of a slow start numbers-wise for Jack in his first pro season, Jim. What have you made of his pro career so far as they give him a little bit of rest coming into the Futures game?
Yeah, which I think was always planned. Because, again, I mean, we're still coming off of the COVID year 2 years ago where guys didn't pitch. And I don't remember how many innings did Jack pitch, about 110 last year or so?
Yeah.
So they're not going to, load him up and have him pitch, 150 this year. I think they'll take it kind of easy. But, I think they expected some growing pains with Jack because they challenged him. I mean, he didn't pitch last year after the college season, and they sent him to AA for his pro debut. So I in a perfect world, yeah, if you're the Rangers, you'd love for Jack to just be dominating AA, and people saying, hey, why don't we call this guy up? He's ready. And, I think Jack has been very similar to the guy that he was at Vanderbilt. I mean, the results aren't as spectacular, but look, he's still got a fastball with tremendous carry. And when he does, I think the biggest need or biggest to-do list item for him is improving his command. And you saw it at Vanderbilt last year. I mean, the fastball is very hard to hit when it's up in the strike zone, and he went through that three-start stretch in the middle of the year where he gave up 8 homers in 3 games when he kind of pitched more around the belt. He's got to locate the fastball, and when it does, it's a great pitch when he does, and gets hit when it doesn't. And he's got a 2 good breaking balls and his curveball and slider, makings of a pretty good change. It's just a matter of you know, I think you're working on the secondary pitches more. And so I know from a stuff standpoint, the stuff's still been there. You know, the 6.30 ERA is probably indicative of, you know, the command and control have to improve. And, again, I think the Rangers knew, you know, he was going to have some adjustments to make, because making your pro debut, you know, I'm an SEC guy. I went to Georgia, so I love the SEC. It's the best conference in the country, no question in my mind. But there's a big difference between SEC hitters and AA hitters, and they're going to make you throw more strikes, and he's kind of going through that right now. But, you know, I still think, in terms of prospect status, he's still the same guy he was when they took him number 2 overall.
Jack Leiter will be in the Futures game Saturday in L.A., representing the Rangers organization on the American League squad out there at Dodger Stadium. The other player of local interest who we hope to interview later on the week on this show here on 102.5 The Game is Robert Hassel III, who was a top 10 pick in 2020 in the abbreviated draft, was committed to Vanderbilt, signed out of high school with the Padres, and is moving his way up through their organization. He was really good in low A last year, Jim, got called up to high A at the end of the season and did not hit well in really half a month there. But this year he's been in high A all year for the Fort Wayne Tin Caps. Has he been as amazing as the numbers look?
Yeah, and you know, it's funny, is like, I think he's been kind of who we thought he was going to be, you know, when the Padres took him as high as they did. He was 8th overall. I think he was like the first high school position player taken out of a Tennessee high school in the first round in like 20,
yeah.
No, I'm sorry, I'm doing about 34 years.
Yeah.
Like, it had been a while. But, like, you know, he was one of the best pure hitters in that high school class. You know, it's hit over power, but it's average power. You know, solid runner, solid defender, solid arm, controls the strike zone, and he's been all that. I mean, I think, you know, it's funny. I mean, with prospects, you know, sometimes guys exceed expectations. Sometimes guys don't live up to expectations, and I think he's probably been exactly what the Padres hoped and thought he would be when they took him.
Who else are you excited to see in the Futures game?
Oh, a lot of guys. I mean, Yuri Perez is a pitcher who fascinates me for the Marlins. He's only 19. He's 6'8". He's in AA. You know, so he's basically the age of a college freshman. He's already in AA, and he's just super polished, you know, for a teenager who's that big. You know, Ellie De La Cruz of the Reds has some crazy loud tools. We've got, I think, 5 of the top 8 prospects in baseball. On our top 100 list are going to be there. Francisco Alvarez, the Mets catcher. Corbin Carroll, the Diamondbacks outfielder. Gunnar Henderson, infielder from the Orioles, Jordan Walker, third baseman from the Cardinals, Anthony Volpe, you know, Jack Leiter's high school teammate.
Yes, sir.
Shortstop with the Yankees. Was Volpe a Vanderbilt commit?
Yes, he was. Yeah,
yeah,
he was.
And he won the first round sign. So those guys will be there. I mean, it's just going to be fun. Like, there have been a couple replacements because of call-ups. I think we have 30 of the 50 guys are on our top 100 prospects list.
Wow.
And there's never... You'll never see a game like that during the course of a year that has that many of the best prospects in baseball on one field at one time.
And the rankings for the two players of local interest we talked about, Jack Leiter, former Vandy pitcher and co-ace, is 17th on the current MLB.com top 100 list. And 7 spots further down is Independence High School alum, Padres outfield prospect Robert Hassel III. They will both be in the Futures game, which you can watch Saturday, a day earlier than in previous years in the All-Star format. It will be Saturday and broadcast on Peacock, which is a streaming service where many MLB games, Sunday games, have been broadcast this year. So that'll be part of the deal, and Jim will be on the call for that game. So looking forward to watching that one and flipping back and forth between that and some big league games on Saturday as well. And now Sunday night, for the second year, the MLB draft will be part of the All-Star game, totally separated all of it from the college season, and also gave us a chance to have much more of an all-inclusive combine than in years past. What was that event like this year?
Yeah, I mean, it's only the second year, but like the two biggest changes this year in year two, and I think it will continue to get bigger and better. One, it was at a big league park, and so what that enabled you to do was last year, you know, it was at the USA Baseball training site in Cary, North Carolina, which is a great site, but you had the on-field stuff at the training site, the team interviews were back at the hotel, which is like 20 minutes away, the physical testing was in the convention center, which was down the street, and you know, it was all over the place. This year, you were able to do all that at the ballpark. So outside of the medical exams, everything was done at Petco Park, which made it easy, and then they changed the rules with medical. Like last year, they were hoping, like for years, they've wanted, MLB has hoped to get medical information on players before the draft. I'm sure we're going to talk about Kumar Rocker in a second. But, you know, the way the system worked in the past was there was a pre-draft MRI program for pitchers, which they, you know, for the top pitchers in the draft, which they could do, but they couldn't force guys to do it. And they didn't really have a lot of incentives for guys to do it. And then, you know, at the combine the last year, the first one, they were hoping a bunch of guys would do it. But you know, I mean, look, this is a negotiation. I'm not going to just give you my medical information with no protection.
Right.
Like, that doesn't help me. So this year they changed the rule. And if you did a physical at the combine, or if, say, you were at the College World Series and couldn't make it to the combine, or couldn't make it to the combine for whatever reason, you could do a physical, I think, in New York at a certain time. If you took a physical, you're guaranteed 75% of your slot, you know, your assigned pick value in the bonus pool system. And so I think they had like 170 or 180 guys out of like about 250 at the combine take physicals. And then there were, I don't know how many more, but of the guys who couldn't attend the combine, some of those guys took physicals too. So those are probably two biggest changes, is just that you had more people attending the combine, not necessarily doing stuff on the field, but more of the bigger name players did attend to at least do interviews, and a lot of them did physicals as well.
Reportedly, the issue early with this Kumar Rocker rule, as many have called it, is players who anticipate themselves as senior signs, who are getting very low signing bonuses just to become pros since they're done with their college career, these types of players are opting out of the pre-draft exam just because they know nobody wants to pay them 75% of their bonus. Is there a way around that in the future?
I don't know, because I know that the union was adamant. Like, initially, it was not necessarily going to be a hard guarantee. Like, you would have the option of negotiating less, but then you theoretically could leverage a guy, too, and say, hey, look, you know, we don't kind of like your physical, and, you know, we'll give you 50%. But, like, the union insisted if they're doing it, it has to be a flat guarantee. Now, that said, and I haven't analyzed every player who went to the combine. Like, you're not sending guys to the combine who are going to be the $10,000 guy who signs in the eighth round. Like, you know, it's interesting for a guy, and I believe he did the physical, and we'll probably talk about him, but, like, Dominic Keegan, who was in his fourth year at Vanderbilt, so he's technically a junior because of COVID, but he's also, and he's relatively young, but it is his fourth year at Vanderbilt, so he has a little bit less leverage than other players may make. I think he did the, I can't, I've lost track of who took physicals and who did. I think he did the physical, but yes, you have to be careful if you're that, and I can't think of a good example for you, like a fourth year senior who, you know, he's more than a $10,000 senior sign, but maybe you're the guy who signs for like half off in the fifth round. You probably don't want to go to the combine or take the physical to combine. Although, I mean, the combine isn't necessarily going to be the top, you know, 250 guys attended. That doesn't mean that'll be the first 250 guys drafted, because there's an awful lot of high school players who attended the combine, and it's hard financially for teams to fit most of the high school players into their bonus pool for what the high school player is going to want to sign for if he doesn't go in the first, say, three, you know, sometimes four rounds. So there's going to be a bunch of guys who are at the combine who aren't going to get drafted high enough to sign anyway.
Jim Callis is our guest, MLB Pipeline, best prospect writer, and will be on the draft broadcast and the futures game broadcast, all the prospecty stuff going on around the All-Star game this weekend. And we got a lot of current and former Vandy players to go through who are eligible for this draft or in the minors right now. So let's start with Dom Keegan, who you mentioned was Vanderbilt's primary first baseman this year, caught some, decided to come back for his senior year. You guys have him right at the edge of the top 100 right now, 97th for this draft. He came back, proved he could hit in the high 300s for average with on base and with slug again, but didn't really get the full chance to catch. Has he upped himself a lot from where he was a year ago?
I don't know if it's a lot, but I think guys are more comfortable with him. You know, last year he got off to a really good start, and then if I remember, he got COVID, and he came back, and, you know, I want to say, Max, didn't he hit close to like 500 before he got COVID, which, you know, you're not going to hit 500 in the SEC, but guys are like, hey, we got to figure out what this guy is, because he was also a guy who, you know, had come to Vanderbilt as a catcher, but not didn't really catch much, and, you know, because of, you know, recovery from surgery, C.J. Rodriguez took over as catcher in 2020, when I think if Dom Keegan had been healthy, he might have been the catcher in 2020. And then C.J. kind of held on to the job in 21, and so, like, then Dominic got sick, but he had a nice year, But I think the biggest issue was people were like, ah, he struck out a lot in SEC play, and we're not sure where he plays in the field. And there were just, you didn't have a lot of track record. There were a lot of questions. And this year he came back, he hit from start to finish, he cut his strikeout rate. I think the thing that's super impressive about him, you've watched him more than I have, Max, but like, he has easy power. He doesn't sell out. You look at him swing, and you're like, okay, looks nice and easy, and then the ball carries off his bat. He caught enough for people to get a better idea what he could do behind the plate. I want to say last year, I think he caught one game against,
right.
I mean, in 2021 against North Alabama or somebody. And I think it's a situation where, you know, he's probably like a fringy catcher. But that's, you know, I mean, how many games has he caught in 4 years at Vanderbilt? It's probably about 30 games, maybe. You know, the way it works, I think, with him is out of 30 teams, you probably have some teams that are like, this guy can't catch. And you probably have, you know, might be 5 or 10 teams that are like, you know what, he might be able to catch. We think there's something there. And you're typically going to get drafted by the team that likes you the most. So I think my guess is he goes in the third or fourth round. I just think, I mean, he's put up numbers for 2 years in the SEC. He has a chance to catch. You know, he's not, I mean, again, Max, you've seen him more than I have. I don't think he's a bad athlete. Like, if he can't catch, I don't know why you couldn't try him in left field. Like, you know, it's not like he's a base clogger or anything. So I just think you have to respect the numbers he put up for 2 years at Vanderbilt. So I think he goes, you know, to me, he's a third-round pick. You know, and like, again, I think whoever takes him will think he has a chance to catch and give him a chance to catch. And catchers are always scarce. So he probably does go in the third round.
If any of you doubt Jim Callis, by the way, of MLB Pipeline, you said 30 or so games catching in college. He caught 34 games over the last four seasons. And I know this one for a fact, didn't have to look it up. You were correct that it was North Alabama who was the one game he started behind the plate.
Last year,
yep.
So.
But you have to know this type of stuff for hundreds upon hundreds of amateur players at really four different levels, if you count all the college divisions as different levels. So Jim Callis is our guest, MLB Pipeline. The other man you mentioned for Vandy who is going back in the draft this year is Kamar Rocker. How many teams want him in the first round? Is it a decent number?
I wish I knew. It's hard to figure out exactly where he's going in the draft. I mean, I can't get into too much detail, like, publicly talking about someone's medical records. But I'll just say, if you read the ESPN story where they talked to his representative, Scott Boras, and they didn't have any information from teams, Scott said, hey, it's a minor scope. Basically, it's all good. He's throwing great and independent ball. You know, we're good going forward. Having talked to several teams, I think I'd characterize it more as, now that they've gotten some medical records, we know he had shoulder surgery last September. I think teams would dispute the notion that there's such a thing as a minor shoulder surgery, and I think teams would dispute that it was just a cleanup. I think teams are comfortable with enough with the information they've received. They kind of have a handle on what's going on, but I do think there are teams that still think there's, you know, a decent amount of risk with his shoulder as well as his elbow. And it's not like, you know, Kumar went in and got the oil changed and now he's good for, you know, the next 10 years either. Like, there's some risk involved. So it's very hard to pin down who's on him, who's out. You know, your team doctors are going to rule in on, like, how much of a risk a guy is. You know, any of these guys are looking at whatever medical information they have. And there are some guys who are really conservative who probably be like, no, let's not do this. And others that are more liberal that would say, yeah, you know, I'm good with this. And, I mean, I do think, I haven't talked to 30. I do think most teams are comfortable taking him, but I think there's this perception just from people who've been tweeting at me that, hey, like Scott Boras said, it was a minor cleanup and no labrum involved and he's touching 99 and short stints in indie ball and Kumar, you know, this is vintage Kumar and he's going the top 5 or 10 picks. If I had to guess, I would say back half of the first round. If you told me he went a little higher than that, if you told me he went after that and got, you know, over slot as somebody's second pick, I have no idea. It's very hard to pinpoint where he's going to go. But I had somebody today who was like, oh, I bet he goes in the top five. And I was like, oh, I'll take that bet. I'll bet he does not. But I just think, positive signs. He came back. He threw well in short stints. But, there's still some risk involved there, at least from the teams I've talked to feel like there's risk.
From your very neutral and well-informed position, is it fair to say at the end of all this, no matter where he goes this week, that both Kumar Rocker got screwed by the system and that the Mets did the correct thing under the system last year by not signing him?
Yes, I think that's fair. The problem with the way the rules work, and even now for guys who didn't take physicals at the combine, when you do your post-draft physical, it's the team doctor. You don't get a second opinion. You don't get an impartial, trio of doctors who review your records and decide what it is. Kumar, now he could have protected himself last year to some extent by doing what existed at the time, which was a pre-draft MRI program for the top, 75 or so pitchers in the draft as determined by MLB. And had he done that, and the Mets had found something wrong with his shoulder or elbow, which they would have looked at in the pre-draft MRI that would have been sent to everybody, he could have received 60%. The Mets would have had to offer him 60% of his slot bonus. Like his slot was about, I want to say about 4.8. He agreed to a $6 million bonus. The Mets would have had to offer him at least $2.8 million to get a pick as compensation, the number 11 pick in this year's draft, for not signing the number 10 pick.
If he had taken the pre-draft physical.
If he had done that pre-draft, it's just an MRI program. Yes. He could have had that protection. But because he didn't, the Mets literally had to offer him $0, and they did. And I think I agree with both those statements, Max. I think we talked about him even last mm-hmm. year, too, before we knew some of the details as to exactly what was going on with it. But, yeah, I've talked to teams and said, look, if I were the Mets, I would have done the exact same thing. Because as good as Kumar is, he hadn't had surgery at that point. You didn't know how the stuff was going to come back. There's still concerns now after the surgery. So I can either take Kumar Rocker in some, with questions about, what exactly, what version of Kumar I'm going to get, or I can just come back next year and get, a fully whole 11th overall pick. So I think most teams would have made that decision. And that said, I do think, and I blame the union for this, because the union negotiates draft rights, even though the draft guys aren't part of the union. The rules that they negotiated were terrible. You're compelled to take a pre-draft MRI program, which gives teams your medical information, and outside of giving you a 60% slot guarantee, which is not a great guarantee. It's not. You're basically left with. The team can, the way the rules worked, the team can get the pick back the next year. The player's like, well, you go back into the draft and you're a year older. And the thing is with Kumar this year, he did not take a physical. He's invited to the combine. He didn't attend. He elected not to take a physical. So once again, whoever takes Kumar, theoretically, if they don't like what the post-draft physical shows, can say, you know what? We're going to offer you $0, and we'll just take the pick back in 2023. Now, I don't think it'll come to that. But yeah, it's an awful rule. They've had various versions of this in the two previous CBAs. This one's a little better. I guess you want to have some negotiation wiggle room. But, it just seems to me if I'm a player and I'm giving you all my medical information before the draft, guarantee me 90% or guarantee me 100%. If you don't like me, just don't take me.
Jim Callis from MLB.com is our guest talking Vanderbilt ties in the MLB draft. Seems like the buzz on Spencer Jones is really, really positive after he played every game in right field for Vandy this spring and hit well. Is that fair to say the buzz is about as good as it could be on him right now?
I think so. He performed well at the combine. I don't think for guys who played the full college season that the combine really moved the needle.
I hope not.
People have seen Spencer Jones. They've actually seen him play in real games against real pitchers, not just take BP. And, if you went to the combine, you're like, oh, I didn't realize Spencer Jones was 6'7", hit the ball hard. I don't know where you've been, because everybody knew that. But I was going to say, I do think, he has some very good, athletic testing results that I think teams that are really into that really like. He's 6'7", 225. He's a good athlete for his size, and You know, again, there's a guy who hadn't played a whole lot. You know, he was a pretty good prospect, two-way guy coming out of high school, had a fracture in his pitching elbow, came to Vanderbilt, had Tommy John surgery in 2020. I think he tried to pitch in summer ball after the pandemic and got hurt again. And then had the Tommy John, and then while he's completing the rehab, he wasn't ready at the start of last season. Kind of worked his way into lineup, I want to say mid 2021, and then he played a full year, and he and Keegan had the best numbers on the team. I think he has a chance to go like in the 20s, in the first round, the bottom third of the first round. I think he probably goes in like the 20 to 40, maybe 20 to 50 range. But I would be very shocked if we did not hear Spencer Jones's name called on draft day. The first night of the draft is going to be two rounds, and I think there's a chance that you hear Spencer Jones's name called before Kumar Rocker's name. The caveat being, I have no idea where to really expect of Kumar.
Yeah, Jones is ranked 51st in the pipeline list you guys have up now, but I imagine that will rise on the list that you put out right before the draft over the weekend. He is the highest rated Vanderbilt player on that list for this year's draft, and we'll move down a couple hundred slots to 231, where you guys have Chris McIlvain, who was in the rotation for Vandy all year. Are there any teams that see maybe a big league reliever type ceiling for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could go a couple different directions with Chris. Like, you could have him as your high floor. You know, it's weird. He has a reputation for being pretty polished, although his walk rate was not great this year. But like, you can get him as your high floor, three pitch starter, kind of average stuff, or you put him in the bullpen and you hope maybe the fastball ticks up to solid and the slider ticks up to plus. He competes well. He's got with his delivery, he should have better control than he shows at times. But he's a tough one because one, Vanderbilt's a great school. Two, that program means a lot to the people who are in the program. And, to me, McIlvain's probably in that broad, fourth to seventh round range. And that, I don't know with him specifically, but fourth to seventh round is not necessarily, the kind of money that gets guys to leave Vanderbilt automatically. So I'm not sure what his asking price is, I think he goes somewhere in that fourth to seventh round range if he's signable.
Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline is our guest and the final player in the current Pipeline Top 250 that is listed as a Vanderbilt player and played for Vanderbilt this past year is shortstop Carter Young, who at one point we thought may sneak his way into even the top 10 of this year's draft. He did not hit well. He even had some problems in the field this year for Vandy as a junior. He has announced that he's transferring to LSU for next season. Of course, he can still be picked. Is there any chance Carter Young gets picked and signs and doesn't transfer and play for the Tigers?
Yeah, so has he said where he's transferring already? I missed it.
LSU.
Well, everybody's transferring to LSU. Hi. They're going to have two teams next year at LSU. They also have...
And they'll play each other in the finals.
They might, because I was going to say, you're not going to keep all your high school recruits. I think they've got something it feels like 15 guys on our top 250.
Mm-hmm.
So I, when you said Tigers, I was like, wait a minute, Clemson? you threw me for a loop there. I had missed that news. It's hard to say. I think what it comes down to is what does Carter Young want to sign for? Because I think at the end of last season, he had a weird year last year where he hit for more power than people thought, but he struck out a lot. He looked kind of erratic defensively at the College World Series. But I think coming into the year, people still thought, okay, this guy's got a chance to be a first-round pick. And I think he's got to remake the swing. It's way too uphill. He just sells out for power way too much. And he hit 207 this year. And he, as you said, he wasn't like in high school, he was known for being a really gifted defender. And I don't think he looks as clean at shortstop as he did in the past. I mean, there's obviously some talent in there. People have seen it before. I think it comes down to, if he wants to play pro ball now, I think it's a situation where you sign for a couple $100,000 in the fifth round type of thing. If, there's any thought, and again, I might be wrong because it only takes one team, but he's not getting first round money, there's no way. But if he's in it, let's say the target is we're not first round money, but $750,000, $500,000? I'm not sure he's getting that. I don't think he would get that after the year he has. So I think it's more a case of if he wants to play pro ball, you tell teams, I will sign for slot where I'm picked, and then he'll get picked probably somewhere, maybe the 6th to 10th round, maybe the 5th, if you're gambling on what you thought he once was. But I don't know. At some point, you got to make adjustments at the plate, and he did not.
So we've talked futures game. We've talked MLB draft with Jim Callis, which are all this weekend. Now, big picture, the two highest-rated position player prospects from Vanderbilt working their way up right now are, unfortunately, from the Vandy point of view, having not-so-great years, J.J. Bleday in AAA for the Marlins, and Austin Martin, who is in AA in the Twins org after being traded as part of the return from the Jays for Jose Berríos last year at the deadline. Do you have any updates or information on these guys?
I thought you were going to say any clue as to what's going to become of them. I was going to say no. I'm baffled as well. We just actually removed both of them from our top 100 prospects list when we did some pre-draft house cleaning, and we'll update the list again after the draft and after guys sign. But you know, both those guys are tough to figure out. I mean, like you, Max, I saw J.J. Bleday win the 2019 College World Series. He led NCAA in home runs. Even though he led NCAA in home runs, I probably would have said, if you made me pick, I would have said hit over power rather than power over hit. And I was just like this guy's going to, this guy has natural power. He hits home runs without trying, and he's just such a good hitter. And if you're trying to make excuses for him, you can say, okay, they pushed him aggressively, high A for his debut, double A after the pandemic. I talked to him in the fall league. He admitted he tried to do too much. At the beginning of 2021, he finished strong. He was good in the fall league where the pitching was terrible. I was like, okay, I could kind of buy in. I think he's figured it out. And he's hitting .218 in AAA, and he's striking out a ton. Like, it's about a 30% strikeout rate, which just shocks me for JJ. Like, the power's there. I think he's just trying to do too much at the plate. And, I don't know how you get through to him, but, he hit .212 last year, hit .218 this year. That's not going to cut it. I mean, he'll play in the big leagues. I mean, he may play in the big leagues this year, but he's kind of become this not quite all-or-nothing guy, but he hits home runs and he draws walks and he hits about .220 and he's done it 2 years in a row to the point where you're like, you can't just write it off as him being pushed too hard or 2021 was a fluke coming back from the pandemic. He's got to make adjustments. And then with Austin, who's already been traded, the question on him was, okay, like we know he can hit, like we know he's going to put the bat on the ball, and the two big questions on him were, how much impact is he going to have power-wise, and where is he going to play defensively? And, you could cut him some slack. He made his pro debut in AA last year. He hit .270, only 5 home runs, and probably more alarming, only 18 doubles. I mean, he only had 25 extra base hits in about 93 games and didn't really answer the defensive questions. Well, this year he's back in AA, but now he's hitting .249 with less power, and I think the questions are still there. I do think he's better than .249 hitter. That would shock me if he doesn't start hitting for more average. But if you're talking let's say he gets up to he becomes a .280 hitter, if you're only providing 5 homers a year, and he can't play shortstop. I just don't think the arm's good enough for the left side of the infield. So maybe he's a second baseman. Maybe he's a center fielder. What if he's a left fielder? I can't have my left fielder hitting .280 with no power. So I'm more concerned about Austin than I am about JJ, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And
but they're both baffling because, talking two top 5 picks and, two of the more polished, offensive players to come out of Vanderbilt, probably along with Dansby Swanson, and I don't know if I'm missing somebody else I should be thinking of, in the last 10 or 15 years, and they've struggled in AA, let alone even trying to get to the big leagues yet.
Yeah, and the only other one who could be on that list is Reynolds, but I think he was a clear 4 at the time of his draft, at least.
Yeah, and I will say, and that's a good call, Max. We should throw Reynolds in that group, and Reynolds should have been a first-round pick, and I think I you know what's weird with him? I just think teams focused on what they thought he couldn't do, or maybe, you know, maybe he's not a center fielder, maybe it's not 25 home run power, instead of all the things he could do, and that he might be those things, which he has become in the big leagues. And I, no offense to fellow SEC outfielder, I could not believe when J.B. Woodman went ahead of Brian Reynolds. I think he went one pick ahead of him. And I will say, I'm sure I've had a lot of freezing cold takes that I'll get reminded of over the years. But when Brian Reynolds went, I remember saying on the draft show, this guy should have been a first-round pick. I cannot believe, I want to say this, I think I remember this, like that he lasted 57 picks in the draft, that was ridiculous. And, you know, he's that was just a mistake by teams. They focused too much on what they thought he wasn't, and it turned out he was anyway. But, you know, even if he was a corner guy and he was more of a 15 home run guy, he could really hit, and he was athletic, and he could play defense. They missed on that one.
There was one man who did go between the two, and it was Sheldon Noisy. But Woodman was
two
picks
prior. I like
Sheldon
Noisy. Yeah. So I'm not going to criticize the Sheldon Noisy pick, but I couldn't. I mean, no offense to J.B. And I don't even think J.B. Woodman played more than like 2 years of pro ball. That just made no sense to me.
Yeah, Woodman out of Ole Miss. Yeah, his last year was 2018. He didn't make it past high A. So Jim Callis knows his stuff. And also, that was a really good stretch in that second round, starting with Noisy and then Reynolds. It was 8 of 9 picks in a row were big leaguers, and the last and third to last of those 8 were Pete Alonso and Bo Bichette. So,
and what's interesting about those two guys is I think Pete, now I will not claim in retrospect, I was banging my fist on the table that Pete Alonso should have gone the first round, but like, I think that was another one where teams, and look, it's tough when you're first base only, you know, right-handed hitter, that's a tough profile. But, you know, I you know, Pete's power was legit. And then Bo Bichette, I mean, I'll admit there's one I was wrong, not that I was killing him, but I remember watching him at the Under Armour All-America game in Wrigley Field in 2015. And I think he won the Home Run Derby. But watching him during the game and taking BP, he had so much going on with his swing. I was like, that's just a really busy swing. And I think teams, that's why he went in the second round. Mm-hmm. His teams are like, wow, is that really going to translate? And it did. So, some nice players there in the second round.
Yeah, well, that was a fun draft in 2016. That was my first year eligible, too, and I was not selected.
How did that happen? We were 40 rounds back then still. Like,
yeah,
how did you go and pit? Well, I'm going to go on the limb, Max, and say that you probably were asking for too much money.
I did not submit to the pre-draft MRI, which I think would have done me in.
That's only if you were one of the top 75 pitchers. So I don't think they were asking that of you. But yeah, your bonus demands must have been too high.
I actually walked into the room where they were doing them. I wasn't invited and told them I was actively not taking an MRI. So
people were worried about your makeup.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's always great to have Jim Callis. He's always gracious with his time. He's the best at what he does. Even on his busiest week of the year, a half-hour-long interview. Jim, great to have you, and thanks for keeping tabs on all our favorite Vandy boys at different levels.
Oh, no, I'm glad to do it. I always enjoy talking to you, Max. I mean, you do a great job. I mean, obviously that's, you know, as good a program as there is in college baseball. And I'm sure if we both had the time, we could probably spend 2 hours talking about Vandy boys.
Yep.
There's plenty of them. But it's funny. I was just going back, and I was literally working on when you called. Haven't done it yet. If you knew what you knew now, 2012 redraft, how
Ooh.
Would you draft the first round? Now, we're only counting players who signed. But if we counted everybody, Walker Buehler and Dansby Swanson would factor very high. But as everybody who's listening knows and is happy that it worked out that way, both of them decided they would rather attend Vanderbilt, and I think that worked out for everybody involved.
And there's an infamous video of them doing a roommate quiz show a couple of months later in the dugout at Hawkins Field. So, Jim, thanks as always. We look forward to seeing you, I guess, 24/7 across all these different networks this weekend for the Futures game and the draft and more.
Yeah, it's going to feel that way. I make my Peacock debut, and then you'll get me for several hours over 4 days on MLB Network.